You need to know this. I'm Joseph, this is Input English. On the Input English channel, I try to be useful. I try to create good, comprehensible input for English language learners. I also try to present information that I have discovered, information that came from experts, and I found this information useful. It has been useful for my language learning journey. I try to avoid infusing this channel with a bunch of unsupported opinions coming from me. Ideally, something that I would present to you would be supported by evidence. This is not an opinion-based channel. This channel is devoted to creating content for comprehensible input. This method is really the modern trend in language learning. We encourage people not to study English, but rather to acquire it. The process of acquiring English with comprehensible input is analogous to what you did as a child when you were acquiring your native language. I have pointed out in other videos that educational systems and educational efforts frequently fall short because they teach the structure of the language, they teach grammar rules, they teach the exception to the grammar rules, and they teach vocabulary. These topics, for most of us, are inherently boring. They don't capture our imagination, and we have trouble remembering them. I took 2 years of German in high school. I got good grades. And then when I got to Austria a few years later, I couldn't buy groceries. I couldn't really do much of anything until I had acquired some German from the local people. I listened and pieced together in my mind what they were saying and acquired enough German over the months that I was living in Austria that I could function. This was before the internet and before comprehensible input videos were available. This particular video grew out of the comments section. I get a lot of comments. From reading the comments, I can see that our viewership consists of committed English learners. They're very sincere, and the comments ring true. They appear to be very honest comments. One fellow wrote me that he was studying English using comprehensible input and SRS. That's where this video came from. SRS, spaced repetition system, is a way of learning facts. We can increase our knowledge with SRS. There are many ways to do it. It can be done on paper. It can be done with flashcards. It can be done with an online tool such as Anki. You could argue that most of Duolingo is SRS. Spaced repetition presents you with information, and then later you try to recall it. You either can or cannot, and then the process repeats. The iteration is spaced, and the learning is fairly efficient. Now, for language learning, SRS is an interesting problem. It fosters translation. If you make an Anki deck, you could have a picture of an apple, and then you could have the word manzana. You could do that. But oh so often, one side of the card is manzana, and the other side is apple. In other words, it's translation-based. And we don't want to do translation. It slows the process down. There's really another reason we don't want to do translation, because it keeps us in the world of explicit knowledge. SRS is a great way to learn all the capitals of all the countries in the world. SRS is arguably a good way to learn a new alphabet. People have used SRS to learn kanji, for instance. I would be very cautious about using SRS to learn English because it keeps us in the realm of explicit knowledge and in the realm of translation, translating between the native language and the target language. That will not serve you well long term. Admittedly, when we first start out in a new language, we're trying to get a grip on it. We don't know any words. We don't know what anything means. And a little bit of translation-based explicit learning can give us a little bit of vocabulary so that we can start understanding the input that we want to use. People are free to use any method they want to learn English. I'm not the police trying to control people's behavior. I'm just pointing out what happens if we use SRS, focus on explicit learning, and then are heavily based in translation. It just doesn't work very well. So I've used this term of art, explicit knowledge. Let me define that. Explicit knowledge is a specific fact or concept that can be easily described in words. You can describe a stop sign. You can explain why the capital of Florida is Tallahassee. This is explicit knowledge, easily expressed in words. In contrast to explicit knowledge, people have described implicit knowledge. That is the knowledge that we have that's hard to put into words. In the mid-20th century, a Hungarian-British scholar named Michael Polanyi wrote on this topic. In his work, he described knowledge as either explicit or tacit. He used the word tacit for implicit knowledge. Polanyi published a book entitled The Tacit Dimension in 1966. In that book, he described in great detail the implications of learning tacit knowledge. His book was very technical, and I must admit I have not read it. I have read excerpts from it and a synopsis, and I conclude that Polanyi helped us move our knowledge and understanding forward. 46 years later, Harry Collins in England published a book entitled Tacit and Explicit Knowledge. That book was published in 2012. The Collins book enlarged upon our understanding, and he gave us a classification system of tacit knowledge that is very helpful. He talks about three types of tacit knowledge. Number one, relational tacit knowledge. Because it is tacit knowledge, that is implicit knowledge, it is hard to put into words. With relational tacit knowledge, the information that is given to someone assumes that they know a lot of other things. So the descriptions of this new knowledge using words is heavily dependent on the context of knowledge that the reader or the listener brings to the equation. Now, I discovered this during my years as a bench scientist. When we do laboratory experiments, we have to do them starting with something. We usually develop an experimental model using published information created by someone else. We duplicate their work and prove that our methodology can give results similar to what they generated in their publication, and then we can start changing the variables and endeavor to make new knowledge. What I discovered as a young scientist is that the written descriptions of how to do an experiment frequently left out a lot of information that I didn't know. It assumed that I knew things that I didn't know. That required either a lot of problem solving on my part or consulting with someone with more experience so that they could fill in the details and help me contextualize this information that I had received. The place you will most commonly find this is in the kitchen. You read a recipe, and the recipe assumes that you have the basic skills and knowledge of how to do things in the kitchen in that cuisine. If you lack those skills, the recipe will generate terrible results or make no sense. The second type of tacit knowledge described by Collins was somatic tacit knowledge. Somatic is of or pertaining to our body, and he gave examples of riding a bicycle, playing a guitar. If you were talking to a young child who wanted to ride a bicycle, it would be very difficult or perhaps impossible to tell that child in words how it's done. You can give some general instructions, but we do not learn to ride a bicycle explicitly. We learn it with tacit knowledge. Somatic tacit knowledge is acquired by demonstration and experience. If you were to give written or verbal instructions to a child on how to ride a bicycle, they would be very rudimentary and would assume that the child would acquire the skills and the knowledge of riding a bicycle by somatic tacit knowledge. You might, for instance, tell the child to straddle the bicycle, don't worry about the pedals, and work on balancing. Get used to moving on the bicycle, pulling your feet off the ground for a moment, and then regaining the ground for balance. Eventually, the ability of this child to do that skill will increase to where the feet can come off the ground for longer and longer periods of time. They learn by observation and experience. The third type of tacit knowledge is collective tacit knowledge. This type of knowledge is embedded in social activities, social practices, social norms, customs, culture. This type of knowledge is acquired by socialization and participation in the group or society. So why is this information important to us? It's very simple. We want to use our time wisely. Our time is very valuable. And if we understand the nature of language acquisition, we'll be more efficient, we'll be more successful. I would submit that relatively little of language learning should be explicit. As I said earlier, that keeps us in the realm of translation between our native language and the target language. That is not desirable. One of the reasons comprehensible input is so effective in helping us acquire our target language is it is very compatible with tacit knowledge. It does not focus on explicit knowledge. It allows our brain to absorb the language when we understand messages in the input. As I've said in other videos, if you can listen to a story and understand basically what's going on in the story, you will relentlessly absorb the language that is used to tell that story. Most of us have a lot of experience in schools acquiring explicit knowledge. In schools, there is relatively little emphasis put on tacit knowledge, and when it is being taught, the methodology is not highlighted. You could argue that children learning skills in sports are acquiring tacit knowledge. It is being acquired by observing demonstrations and then through their own experience. Since we have a lot of experience with explicit knowledge and less experience understanding tacit learning, it presents us an interesting problem when we use comprehensible input to acquire a language. The problem is we can't tell that anything's happening. With learning in school by explicit methods, we had a lot of ways to measure our progress. We took tests. We got grades. We could easily compare what we knew to the other children in the class. With language acquisition, we have to absorb a lot of language with input, and during that phase of our development, there is no way to tell that we've made much progress. Day to day, week to week, we don't have a sensation of any progress. I certainly noticed that during my acquisition of the Spanish language. Day to day, week to week, I couldn't tell I'd made any progress whatsoever. This lack of apparent progress frequently gives us language learners the sensation that we had attained a plateau and that no progress is being made. There are a lot of videos online that describe the plateau as if it is some sort of disease, some sort of curse that has been rested upon you, and you need to pull yourself free from the dreaded plateau. Well, really, the plateau is a sensation. It's an impression that we get, and it stems from the apparent lack of progress. We are learning tacit knowledge, and we don't get much sensation of progress. But just because the progress isn't apparent to us day to day, week to week, does not mean that it's not there. We indeed are making progress every time we get new input. This morning, before coming out here to the park to make this video, I got my usual 1 hour of input in Spanish. During one of the videos, the presenter used a phrase that I'd heard before, but I had one of those aha moments. I realized that I actually knew what she was saying, but I never looked the words up. I never tried to study that phrase. I just absorbed it from context. But today I noticed that I knew that phrase. I noticed that it made sense. And I noticed that she used it repeatedly in that same video. So what are our options here when it comes to this unfamiliar tacit knowledge that appears to be so important in language acquisition? You could read Polanyi's 1966 book on tacit knowledge. I don't recommend doing that. It's very dry, it's very detailed, and it's hard to read. You could read Harry Collins' book, Tacit and Explicit Knowledge, published in 2012. I don't recommend that. It's not an easy book to read. I don't think you would get much benefit from it. For our purposes, just understanding that a lot of the knowledge we need is tacit knowledge. There's a great example of this that you can do as a thought experiment. Think about your keyboard on the computer. You are used to typing. The keys are in a particular order. In the United States, by far the most common keyboard is called QWERTY, because on the top left, the letters are arrayed Q, W, R, T, Y. So with that as background, think in your mind about where the keys are. Maybe take a piece of paper and draw from memory your keyboard. with QWERTY, you'd start out with a Q-W-R-T-Y, and then what comes after Y? And what are these keys in the middle? And where's the V? And where's the B? And some of these keys you'll be able to describe in words where they are. I, for one, could not reproduce a keyboard from memory, but I've been touch typing since I was a young teenager, and I typically don't look at the keys. I type based on their position, and I use tacit knowledge. I have tacit knowledge of where those keys are. I don't think about it. That's very much the way Spanish is going for me now. The last conversation that I had with a native speaker, I was astonished that I was using words that I didn't even know I knew. They just boiled out of me. I had a thought and the words came out. I would submit that that is the tacit knowledge we're looking for when we acquire a language. Get enough input and the language will start coming out of us. At that point, look for opportunities to speak with other people so that we can build our experience using the language. We probably should keep SRS very compartmentalized when what we're trying to learn is purely explicit knowledge. I invite comments below, and if you like videos like this, be sure to click on this one next. See you soon.